Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Once again, we appreciate the flexibility from our man, Mr. Purple Insider, Matthew Collar. Matt, normally with us on Fridays, but the great Pat Royce, mutual friend of both of ours, turns 80 on Friday. He's going to join us in studio. So Matt is with us today. I see from your tweets and others that the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings has said both quarterbacks will receive reps during the week. He also said earlier in the week that he's not going to play games, that you're going to know who is the starting quarterback. So let's go this way. Let's say both are healthy enough to play, somewhere close to 100%. Obviously, JJ coming back from the ankle and Wentz with the shoulder. If both are healthy, who do you think Kevin O'Connell should start, and who do you think he will start?
I think the answer is the same, but I'm not sure that I'm right about this because there's only hints and breadcrumbs, but no real clear evidence. I think the answer is the same, and it's Carson Wentz, because the way that Kevin O'Connell has talked, including today, about working with J.J. McCarthy last week in a one-on-one type of setting during the bye week while the rest of the team was, I don't know, vacationing in Mexico or something, that they were here at TCO Performance Center, must be, throwing reps to Josh McCown or something out there, that they had to really break down a lot of the mechanics and get back to basics with J.J. McCarthy. And O'Connell was talking about, well, he's very accurate and throws the ball really well when he gets his feet right and when he gets his base correct and all those sorts of things. And to me, that just sounds like mini camp stuff. I mean, that does not sound like you are playing the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles this weekend. And last week we're reteaching the quarterback where to put his footsies. I mean, that just seems to me like that's a lot to ask, right?
But it is. So can I ask this then and just jump in? If KOC is the quarterback whisperer and JJ, while injured, he studied all this last offseason, had the meetings with everybody, and then had exhaustive mini camp and training camp, shouldn't we be a little bit further along with this than we are?
Well, you know, that's the hard thing, right, is that there really is no way to simulate what it is actually like to play an NFL game. I mean, think about this. The defense that gave him all sorts of problems, the Atlanta Falcons, I mean, they just beat Josh Allen the other night, the best quarterback in the NFL.
Right.
So, I mean, it's this is not for for newbies who are trying to figure out how to throw a ball still. I mean, this is why you see Daniel Jones and Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold take 5, 6, 7 years before they can be top-notch quarterbacks and they end up with other teams. And I'm not saying it's going to take that long with J.J. McCarthy, but it might take 3 more weeks behind the scenes. And you know, we saw him open practices all throughout training camp, and I thought that he did a very good job of developing and becoming more accurate and had very good joint practices. But in joint practice, they can't destroy you if you mess up. They just go sack, and then everybody goes back.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, I think that there's so many things that O'Connell has mentioned that they were working on, and it just adds up to, are you sure this is a good idea? And remember, I mean, this is a guy that they always wanted to have sit behind Sam Darnold last year and practice for the entire year, but he ends up getting hurt and they miss out on all that. And I think maybe all of us, including Kevin O'Connell, underrated just how much time was actually missed, because when we start to add it up, how many passes has this guy thrown going back to even high school? I mean, not that many in either of his seasons in college, none last year, and we're talking about 40 so far this year. I mean, that's just 40 passes since the national championship game, along with a couple of preseason games, is not anywhere near enough for a guy to be a finished product. And I think it is a better idea to continue to develop him, because if you put somebody out there with bad habits or who doesn't have his feet underneath him, then you're talking about the potential for injury. And that's what already happened to J.J. McCarthy this year. And you're also talking about the potential to get destroyed by the Eagles, completely lose confidence for the team, the franchise, the players in the locker room to lose confidence. And I'm not saying they shouldn't ever play McCarthy ever again, but if you need a couple of weeks here, they have two games in 4 days coming up. Mm-hmm. Let the veteran quarterback try to win one out of two there, keep your season on track, and then evaluate J.J. McCarthy where you are coming out of that mini bye week where he'll have a couple of weeks. That's how I would handle it. I don't know how O'Connell's going to handle it. He might just have straight-up competition in this very short week of practice. And, hey, if he plays better, then they're going to put him out there. But I think that's a little bit risky, and I wouldn't want O'Connell to do that to try to prove a point about how well he can coach up the young kid.
That's a very logical, rational explanation. And if I wanted to play the counterpoint, I think I would or could on Wentz, and you'd say, that makes sense also. I'm trying to think the last time the Vikings played where, if both healthy, we honestly had no idea who would be their starting quarterback. This is a very strange situation. So let's go to this part of the McCarthy angle. Let's also not forget that when the Vikings were 2-2 and their offense was doing nothing in London against the Browns, a very good defense, that Wentz went 9-9. And drove him down. I'm sure that's a part of the equation for O'Connell. The folks who have reached these grand conclusions on J.J. McCarthy already, and he can't get it done, foolish, maybe game manager, they're just fools. They're just absolute fools, and there are dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of examples where it takes a bit of time. Now, at some point, he's going to have to play. We both acknowledge that. And we both acknowledge what an asset it is to have a young quarterback who you believe in with a lower salary. But with those two other guys continuing to have great success so far, in Darnold and in Jones, as much as you believe in, let's find out at some point what you have with the kid quarterback, is there any part of how they handled both those guys and the pursuit of either one and feel like in this specific area, the Vikings made a mistake, either with Jones, who might be quarterbacking the second or third best team in the league, or Darnold, who looks like he did a lot of last year when he was a great quarterback for the Vikings?
Yeah. I mean, I think with Jones, the reason he was going to Indianapolis and not staying here, like, they made him a significant offer. It was basically, they said, you're starting. Like, they were pretty much done with Anthony Richardson. Hey, you're going to start. And the Vikings obviously wanted him to have maybe a competition that he would probably lose because they like J.J. McCarthy. I think the one where, I mean, in hindsight, but then you maybe also could have seen this coming, is that Sam Darnold would be good. The guy threw for 4,000 plus yards, 35 touchdowns, and won 14 games. And we acted like O'Connell threw the passes for him. And when I see him throw a 60-yard bomb to Jackson Smith Njigba for a touchdown, I'm like, I don't know, man. I saw a lot of those last year. Seems like it might not be a fluke. I think that's the one where, if you were going back in time, you would probably franchise tag him, because when you – We made all this, you know, out of, well, if you franchise tag him, you can't sign this guy, that guy, and the other guy. Well, Ryan Kelly is out. Jonathan Allen is underperforming, and Aaron Jones is out. And, hey, look, I just found $40 million. So, you know, I think in the offseason, I thought, you know, are you sure that you want to move on from a guy like that? Because if we go through the history of guys who win that much and put up those kind of numbers – there's not too many that turn out to be bad quarterbacks, but I think the way it ended was so bad that it would have been incredibly unpopular, and it also would have just deviated so much from what their original plan was with J.J. McCarthy. But they knew when they made that move, they had to do it on a very, very small sample size of that guy in a training camp, that guy in a preseason, and there was always going to be a chance that once you arrived at this moment, he wasn't ready. And I think even the fact that we're talking about it, like, look, this is Carson Wentz, okay? This is not, a top-notch starter that he's competing against. It's not even Daniel Jones. It's a guy who's been a backup. So I think that tells you everything you need to know about how far behind he actually is at this moment that it's even a discussion. But they had to just make a bet on who he is and how far they thought he could come. But certainly right now, if you said, hey, if this team had Sam Darnold, how good would they be? The answer would be very good in an NFC that's pretty wide open.
Well, even this one, then we'll pause. We'll get to the other injuries and what's happened to the Eagles. And is this a blip or is this kind of what happened in the 23 season when they just completely tanked? Let's say in the last regular season game against Detroit, he plays well, but they lose. Okay. But he plays pretty much how he had played most of the year. And then the Rams game happens. And it's the same thing. Okay. But it's not the back to back games. Matt, at that point, do they give him that franchise money? Because I think it's pretty clear if he plays well in both those games, even if they lose to the Rams, they're franchising. I think he just needs to play well in one of those two games. And we're talking about Darnold as the starter once again.
I 100% agree. I mean, I think that even if he had played badly against Detroit and then they lost 27-24 against the Rams and he played well, that he would still be the quarterback here. And we've seen the flukes before in the past, the Case Keenum or, Gus Frat had a run in there. I mean, it was different with Sam Darnold, and it's so easy to forget because of the way that those last two games went and how badly they were beaten, and he didn't play well or even close to it in either one of those games. But I 100% agree with you. In fact, after he beat the Packers, I thought the discussion was over after he beat the Packers in Week 17. He's got to at least come back on the franchise tag. Now, I didn't think you should sign him up to a five-year, $500 million contract and trade away J.J. McCarthy. But the other part of the equation was always, well, that would allow you to develop McCarthy the way you always wanted to. And they didn't have a chance to do that. And I think I probably underrated myself the value of getting reps in practice, playing on the scout team and all those things that you see a lot of different NFL offenses that you're learning, and you get to make throws against the number one defense every day. And quarterbacks develop that way playing in scout team. And he didn't do that. And he just hasn't thrown the ball enough. I mean, it's, and then I guess there's the other part too, it's not just Darnold, but it's Rodgers is another thing where he's playing well. With Pittsburgh, I wouldn't say he's playing great, but he's playing well enough for them to win. And then the fact that you didn't get Carson Wentz until a month before the season, and if you thought that, and this is, I guess they must have thought that things were going well with McCarthy.
For sure.
Because they stuck it out with Sam Howell. And then this even ties all the way back into another point that it was only two games, and one of them ended well, and the other one ended poorly. And how are we supposed to evaluate someone on two games? Yeah. I mean, we've seen that so many times in the past. So it is a very tricky situation to really pin down. Like, he might get back in there and be great. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's just the way that they're talking about it and not immediately naming him the starter the minute that he's healthy.
Right.
That's what's got me hesitating on what KOC must have seen from him in those first two games.
Let's pause, come back. Who else is coming back from injuries? Because they obviously have had a lot. And what's happened to the world champions, right? The world champions last year, we saw them just destroy the Chiefs. They had lost to the Chiefs in a close Super Bowl a couple years before. They had most of their guys back. But now they're 4-2, and this will shock you in Philly. They think the season's over. Matthew knows all this. He provides you great insight. Purple Insider. Daily stories, podcasts, mailbag, updates in the game. It's really a must if you're paying attention to the Vikings. PurpleInsider.football. Check it out now.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I get it.
You're with me.
Caller here Okay. Blake Cashman, he's back. He matters. Who else are we on the fence on? Who else do you think will be back for a team that has suffered a high number of injuries early in this season?
Yeah, I think the biggest name is Donovan Jackson, and he should be back. They didn't place him on IR after he got hurt, and he had his surgery, and it wasn't expected to keep him out for that long, and he's going to wear a brace on his wrist. And he told us the other day that they didn't really advise him playing against the Cincinnati Bengals, but he was like, well, yeah, if I can't make it worse, then I'm going to go play against the Bengals. And honestly, he played a great game. And I've really been impressed by Donovan Jackson in so many different ways. His personality, his intelligence, his work ethic, how much better he got during training camp. He was getting killed by Javon Hargrave throughout camp and then got better and better and better. And then his first couple games, I think he was very good for a rookie guard. And they need him. I mean, trying to put out an undrafted free agent over there, that was a rough ride for Joe Huber in his first game the other day. So getting Donovan Jackson back, if they do, would be pretty big for them. A couple other guys still up in the air. We saw Brian O'Neill practice, and it's not clear just how much. We'll get the full report later on today how much he's able to do. They certainly need him over Justin School in there. Although, for this week, Philadelphia has lost some guys as edge rushers. Nolan Smith is out. And yep. Zadarius Smith
Bye-bye.
Randomly retired. Yeah, that was, you know what, if he was going to go out, I'm not surprised, because he was a unique dude when he was here. But they don't have edge rushing, so it's really the interior. And I think they'll start Blake Brandel at center, and he did a great job against Cleveland, so they're going to keep doing that. And then the other one is Andrew Van Ginkel, and it just hasn't seemed promising for him with the neck injury. It goes all the way back to camp, and neck injuries for a position where you got to bend around people, it's not too easy. So I think they need to take that one slowly and continue to give Dallas Turner time there. But he was not practicing the other day, just working out on a side field, which is not a great sign. But, I mean, overall, you're going to go into the game normal banged up as opposed to like catastrophic apocalyptic banged up, which they were earlier in the season.
If you're a Philadelphia sports team and you're underachieving, it is catastrophic. It is implosion. And the Eagles were highly praised for all the valid reasons coming to the season. And now when I read up for our conversation and paid attention, it's Jalen Hurts, and he can't find either of the two stud receivers. Then you have one of their great offensive linemen, Lance Johnstone, ripping the offense coordinator. Apparently, they don't have any cornerbacks. You talked about the defensive line and all the changes then. And then even though Sirianni has this great record, it just seems like no matter what he does, people doubt him. So how much should people have changed their view of the Eagles now as we sit here on October 15th compared to how they started the season?
Yeah, I think the local media for Philadelphia sets the tone. They're slightly different than us here in the Midwest,
correct.
When it comes to I truly think that having grown up in the East, people in the Midwest cannot fathom how they talk about their sports teams out there.
I agree 100%.
And that does set the tone. So when a team has the standard as high as it is for Philadelphia, where they've been to the Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl in the last 3 years, every single two-game losing streak, as opposed to being just sort of normal for the NFL, is the sky is falling, they're dust, they're toast, everyone needs to be traded, fired, et cetera. And I understand why, because like that's how high they've set the bar. I mean, if the Vikings were 4-2, if they won this game, we'll be like, hey, good job, good start to the season, because at this point, we can't put the bar up at the Super Bowl. And the Eagles, that's how they look at it. I do think that the injuries and some exits from players, when you win the Super Bowl, people come and take your players and give them lots of money, like Milton Williams or Mekhi Becton, and their offensive line has not been the same. And I think that's why Saquon Barkley hasn't been as good. That's why people talk about running backs that way, is that they're often up and down based on what's around them. And something is definitely wrong with the passing game. And I don't know what it is, but not being able to get the ball to A.J. Brown and seeming like Jalen Hurts just isn't seeing things very well, which is, I mean, okay, he's never been the best passer in the NFL, but he's usually been pretty darn good, and that's regressed this year. And I wonder if that has to do with the offensive line and the pressure and not building off of the run the way he has so effectively. And then their secondary is banged up, and it is downright awful. I mean, this is where the Vikings, no matter who's playing quarterback, have a great chance against this team. Is Quinyon Mitchell looks like he's pretty banged up, and their backup, Adoree Jackson, is atrocious. So, I mean, if you're talking about either Jordan Addison or Justin Jefferson going up against him, you could get a huge advantage. And this might be a reason to play Wentz, because as long as you see where to properly throw the football, I think you're going to have receivers open all day against the Eagles.
You are filling in for H. Lake on Friday, correct?
I am, yeah. Yep, yep.
How much Mall of America talk?
I could talk all day about all that. It's a huge mall, so I could just talk about everything that I do.
Thanks
in there.
For that insight.
Or maybe I'll spend the whole time ripping the Minnesota Wild. I don't get to talk enough hockey around here.
Did you watch a fair amount of last night's game?
I did. I do not understand why this team can't score a 5-on-5 goal, but I guess it's early. I'll have to listen to your coach conversations.
Yeah, I think people are overreacting that. Let's just briefly before you go. They're scoring plenty of goals, right? And how can you break up Boldy and Kaprizov right now, as magical as they are? And the kid defenseman, man, in the third period, he was spectacular. And I get the debate. But if you have Boldy and Kaprizov scoring at that level and playing so great, I get you're devoid of offensive talent when you get to lines 2, 3, and 4. But they had 40-some shots again last night. They had 52 shots the other night. I think defense is the bigger concern to me than scoring goals.
Well, and also some of these goals have just sort of been like fall asleep at the wheel. I thought that I was at the Columbus game. I went with a friend of mine, and they dominated the puck the whole night.
Yes.
And then just gave up goals where you're like, guys, the period started. Did you know that? I there might be a focus thing, maybe a little bit of a, like you said, some young players still adapting. I don't know. But I think they have the talent to score a lot of goals, and three games is absolutely not enough to figure that out. So I wouldn't be panicking, but so far it's like, hey, you know, you don't have to wait until the power play. It's okay. You know,
you're allowed to. It's within the rules.
Exactly. I'd be a little bit more concerned about how they've played defensively in the last two games than I would actually them controlling the puck and scoring.
Right, and we should know two of those goals last night, too, were empty net. And it was third period was highly entertaining. They were just dominating a damn good team in Dallas. All right, sir. I appreciate the flexibility as always, and I know you'll be great on Friday filling in for H. Lake. Thanks for your time as always.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Matthew Caller, good guy and does great work. Purple Insider, check it out. Cars. We're talking cars when we come back on CCO.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
5 years ago, the average new vehicle costs right around $40,000. That's 5 years ago. Right now, it's a little over $50,000. Okay. You think of the electronic vehicles? They account for, what's your guess? Did you read the whole story?
No, I didn't read the entire thing.
Electronic models accounted for what percentage of new vehicles sold last month? It's a record, too.
28%.
11.6.
Not even close.
Not even close. The average electric vehicle sold for $58,000. So it's more. Not crazy more. It's more. More than 60 models with an average sticker price north of $70,000. $5,000.
60 models, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
The $20,000 car, according to this story, it's basically gone.
Goodbye.
It's basically out of there, and I watched a couple video presentations of this, too, that said kind of the standard four-door. That baby's close to $60,000. So what is your reaction to this when you first hear this? 651-461-9226. That we've jumped $10,000 in 5 years. And yes, tariffs have played some part. But to act like they weren't jumping up in the interim is not true. COVID, we weren't driving for a while. And then a lot of people aren't driving nearly as much now because of COVID. I was startled. I was pretty, as somebody who might be considering a different car, because my car is about 5 years and I'm just trying to see, you know, because I'm not having any issues. And I'm kind of saying, well, what if I drive it for 3-4 more years? Are there any signs of it breaking down or value? Because I like the car I have right now. But $50,000, go ahead and say what you said, not only in the email, but also in our off-air conversation about somebody buying a new car.
Unless you have stupid money to burn, you're buying a new car, you're a dummy.
So anyone who's buying a new car is a fool, you're saying, because why?
Because the price is ridiculous, because we all know how much of... You okay over there? Did you just break the studio? My goodness. We all know...
The backrest on this chair, and I wasn't even leaning on it, just fell off.
You could have had a heck of a workers' comp situation right there.
I could. Simply.
Quick, lay on the floor.
No, that's what I thought about. If I really wanted to commit to it, I'd lay on the floor. Suing! But then I'd lay on the floor and I would get violently sick.
Well, that's also
from this
comp.
Disgusting. No, I don't really want to get.
Either way, you're getting paid. Come on, you could use that money on a new vehicle.
And I could get a car.
No, we know how much a car depreciates the second you drive it off the lot. You're going to spend 50, 60, 70. God forbid you're buying a pickup truck and paying maybe 80 or 90.
Those are like 70. Yeah, well. Money to burn is going to host 3 to 6 because he's got a shiny brand new, you know.
He gets one every other week. That's a nice deal for him.
He does.
But it makes absolutely no sense. And I understand used car prices.
Backrest of the chair just broke right there.
They've obviously gone up too.
Get us out of this
COVID.
Building. God, please.
But it's still no comparison. It's still. I bought a nice used car, a 2023 in May for... I paid under 20, I think $17,000-ish.
Yep.
There's no other way to go in my mind. Absolutely no excuse.
One of the excuses might be finding said used car. Because a lot of people are just like you. I've bought tons of used cars. I bought more used.
Yeah, you buy four at a time.
Yeah, exactly. I do. I buy one for each day of the week, you know. But you got to find the one that's available that you want for the right price.
True.
And you're not the only person who feels this way. And also, it's for some, it's the priority of a car in your life, right? For some, they're like, okay, this is one part of my life where I'm just going to spend a little bit more money than I should. Because I like having this car because it's cool or really works for the family or whatever it might be.
It's a status symbol. For most people, it's an absolute status symbol.
Are you saying the people who buy a new car, it is a status symbol?
I think for a lot of them, yes. I need this new car. I deserve this new car because Bob down the street's got a new car. I don't want to drive this old jalopy that I have. I need a brand new shiny car to tool around the neighborhood to show off at work. Absolutely.
My first car was a used Oldsmobile Calais in 1981. Okay. Also, my father had no idea that I drove it a number of times before I had my license. Right. And so From 1981 until recently, I never had a nicer car. I have bought a nicer car recently. I just did it because I thought, I want to have one nice car. And I did it for me. I don't, you know me, I don't give a bleep what one person thinks about my car. 0.0. I just like it.
You spend all your money on haircuts. I know that.
That's also sadly true. And considering the product. There are people who do that. But the market must be there. If you can charge these prices, they're not doing it. And it's not like you go by the lot and they've now dramatically reduced the prices by $20,000. They're getting this cash.
We can't be shocked that people are not always the brightest with their financial decisions in this country or any country.
And I bought a DeLorean. That was the car I bought.
Nice.
Yeah. Do we ever see any DeLoreans anymore?
I saw one a couple years ago. I can't remember where it was.
We were at the Bloomington place years ago at the Fan. There were like multiple DeLoreans. It made absolutely no sense. Okay, let's pause right here. What is your thought when you see these car prices? Makes sense? It's outrageous? Are you like Dave? You're only a fool, Dave is saying. He pities the fool.
I don't pity them.
Yeah.
Make your own decision.
I just wanted to work on Mr. T. For anybody who buys a new car, and then also, if you want to mention, what's your favorite car? What is your favorite car that you ever owned? Do you got a favorite?
I like the one I'm driving now.
Yeah.
Chevy Equinox. That's nice.
That works.
My very first was a Mazda 626 that was bought for like $2,000 in the used car lot by my parents. Radio didn't work. AC didn't work.
Yeah. Jim Lupien Olds, God knows what deal, you know who was working. Because I wasn't driving his car. There was no practicing in his car for getting behind the wheel. I had to drive with other parents. And my father was the worst driver ever on planet Earth. Ever.
I think that's well documented.
From 1990, when I moved back, till I threatened him with never getting to see his grandkids again, and he finally gave up the wheel, I didn't drive with him a single time after I moved back. Not one single time. Good luck to all of us who survived his driving. What do you want to say on the car topic? 48 past 2. You know how to track us down on the Harrigan Hotline. 651-461-9226. Adam's in the house. We're talking cars. Dave's calling every one of you a fool if you buy a new car. And new car prices, 5 years ago, $40,000. Now they're at $50,000. A lot of texts coming in, 651-461-9226. Rob wants to join the conversation. Rob, thanks for listening. What's on your mind?
Hey, Chad, thanks for having the call. I think prices have been up for a little bit, even during the recession. 3 years ago, we looked at buying a Durango, and they were about $55,000 then. But I found a way, like Dave, to work around it. And I agree with Dave. The price is outrageous to buy a new car. I found a Durango with 7,000 miles. It was 2 years old. It was selling for $31,000 with some body damage. No frame, clean title, and I showed it to my wife, and she was a little apprehensive at first. And then she said, okay, and we ended up getting a car. And thanks to a company in Burnsville, we were able to fix the 14 bullet holes and clean up the seat where the bullet was at.
You did say bullet holes, right?
Yep, 14 of them.
Yeah. Was this Adam's car?
No, it was not. Not. But it worked. I mean, we got the car, by the time we got done cleaning it up, we got it for $35,000 with 7,000 miles. It's a $20,000 savings.
Yeah. No, that's astute. I agree. I can't argue with that. Thank you.
You're welcome, Chad.
Adam, you have any hesitancy at all if the used car has bullet holes riddled throughout?
Was it Joe?
Rob.
Rob, sorry.
Some of us believe in our listeners
wanted
a little
to ask,
bit.
Whatever, they're all the same. If you got the backstory. Like a car I'm okay with. I don't want a house, though, where there's been a horrible crime committed in the home.
Well, there was this horrible crime out in, was it Medina? Where the suspicion was for a long time that the guy had killed his wife and then Blylevin bought the house.
Oh, I had no idea.
I'm out too.
No,
Dave, are you out? As cheap as you are, this house has been reduced now. It's 1/4 the price because there was a significant crime at the house. And it's notorious, and it's been covered by the local media. But you can get it, and it's a house you like, and it's 1/4 the price it should be. Are you buying that house?
1/4 the price? There could be a meth lab in the basement. I think I'd still take a shot.
Still operating.
Still working.
Just, hey, guys, fellas, just keep it down.
Keep
your
heads up when you're coming in.
Keep the smell down. Do something.
I also asked your favorite car or your coolest car. Do you have a car that you really think?
I had a Lincoln when kind of Lincoln upgraded there. They made a smaller sports coupe. And I leased one of those at one point, and it was, I loved that car. I had it for like 2 years. It was a 2-year lease, and it was great.
1983 Olds Firenza hatchback. My favorite. The hatchback.
Yeah. I mean, the first car I ever had, too, was great. It was a 1978 LTD. The original owner was former Minnesota Governor Harold Levander.
And
it had cigar burns in the upholstery where he would just set his hand down while he was driving and the old cigar would
burn. Oh, my God.
Great car, too.
I mean, in 10 years, are we even going to be driving our cars?
No.
When are we going to have the self-driving cars commonplace in our state?
It's really soon. Oh, you mean the Waymos? We talked about they're testing them here now. So
we've been talking. I feel like the two of us have been talking about the entire time I've been here. That it's a and I get it. They're around the country,
yeah.
But
and they're going to be like in Vegas now. They have ones that are, which was my theory all along. So I think I had this idea that the cars, they won't even look like cars anymore. They'll be like moving rooms where you can get in with a table and sit and face each other, and it'll just shuffle you around.
This was your idea?
I thought of it.
Yeah. You buying that in any way that this was his idea?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, that's a no. More text.
May not have been the only one with the idea. Let's just say that.
Okay.
May have heard about it from a guy that stole it and called it.
And others may have had it before me.
I read the story, but I stole it.
Immaterial.
I agree that the new car and truck prices are absolutely insane right now. My favorite car was my 1979 Trans Am with T-tops. It was 1980. It was 30 years old and single. Need I say more? Yes, exactly. This person just bought a 2025 Ford Bronco Sport for $35,000. That seems like a reasonably good price. Considering the other prices we're talking about, it is. My husband and I always buy new cars because neither of us are mechanical at all. We buy new cars, drive until they have over 100,000 miles. They last that long with the regular maintenance. Then we buy a new one. That's not the worst policy, right? Is it the average car on the road? I think this came up last year. 11 years old, right around there. Does that surprise you? I think that was the number. I really do. Does that seem too old or about right to you guys?
It makes sense. I mean, 100,000 miles used to be big for a car to get to 100,000. Now it's 150, 200.
New cars have so many new safety features, worth the money. They do. But that doesn't stop you from, let's say next year you buy one from 2025 and it's got 10,000 miles on it.
They also have a lot more distractions than newer cars do.
That's never stopping.
No.
Honestly, we're just going to have TVs that are on constantly.
When you're in the car... The apartment car that Adam Carter thought of, the nice big TV will be a nice accoutrement.
Shower, too?
And a urinal.
Yeah. You're obsessed with urinal things. You can't.
Got to pee a lot. What are you going to do?
In fact, his whole topic next 3 hours is peeing. Pro or con?
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you
what
know why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.